Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is multi-instrumentalist Vicki Randall. Randall is a founding member of the band Skip the Needle. The group issues its new EP, Wake Up, Wake Up, Wake Up, Friday, March 7th. As Randall explains in this conversation, the material was produced and recorded at Women's Audio Mission. It is the only professional recording studio in the world run entirely by women and gender-expansive people. In addition to her work with Skip the Needle, we discuss a large part of her career, which includes stints with Mavis Staples, Herbie Hancock, and a long tenure with the Tonight Show Band, as well as her work with the legendary MC5. That's Vicki Randall on Into Music, coming up now.
I want to, of course, talk about the EP and everything, but just listening to everything that you've done with this band and looking at your body of work, it occurred to me that if there's an arc through not necessarily all, but probably most of the music that you've made or been part of, it's that it's music that realizes that there's a purpose to music beyond just, you know, let's dance, let's have a good time. So when did you kind of discover that music could be this other instrument of change and voice and agency and all that?
Honestly, almost immediately. Outside of the very, let me preface this by saying my father was a jazz piano player, and not unlike a lot of jazz musicians, he had feelings about rock and roll. He really didn't get it. He didn't think it was music. It was real music. But what I heard when I first was able to hear rock and roll for the first time was its power, its immediacy. And when I started off playing guitar, here's one right here. I started off playing guitar as my first instrument. And because folk music and protest music was what was happening right then, I learned all the protest songs. I was caught up in when I came up during the Vietnam War. I came up during the times when people were protesting against injustice and war, everywhere. And so it was impossible for me not to understand that music was a vehicle for this. And I gravitated towards the artists, like Buffalo Springfield, for example. I gravitated towards the artists that were saying those things. And that's always been parallel with the music that I've sung and written, and the artists that I aligned myself with, the women's music artists that I recorded with, as well as the other, I'll say, more well-known artists that I worked with. You know, it was always there, and it just feels, they feel inextricably linked, because music is a language. It's a language that we can use for all kinds of things. It's basically a language to communicate to each other what we feel and that we feel, and helps us to move through life with an understanding of why we feel things. I don't think it's any accident that there aren't songs that, there aren't famous songs that say, you know, fuck your neighbor. We don't care about you, you know? The songs that people love are the ones that say, come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together. Like, those are the songs that everyone loves to sing because it brings out the best in us. We want music to bring out the best in us. So there.
Did your dad eventually did he have a moment maybe where he kind of came around and said, okay, I recognize what rock is doing, and it's not as different as what we're doing?
I don't know if he ever did, but he stopped complaining about it. I think that eventually people understand. It's bands like Rage Against the Machine, for example. I have been astonished that people could listen to Rage Against the Machine and not know what the machine was. Not know. I mean, I've been astonished a lot over the last several years watching people, mostly young white guys, talk about Star Wars as if the Death Star wasn't evident that money and power and, you know, and tyranny and autocracy was the Death Star. And I mean, I'm fascinated, but people sometimes can close their hearts and their ears to what's all around them. But I think that art always prevails. I think that music always, you know, talks to our better angels and talks to our hearts and eventually brings out the joy and the love in us if we're open to it.
For me, there's a confluence with music. I mean, I guess you could say it's the same thing, but it's that sense of community, which when you find your community, you gain safety.
Mm.
And then that thing that we're talking about, I don't like the word message, but the meaning behind the music, what it's trying to convey. So when you have safety, then you feel like you've really found those people who, I guess you can, I've always felt like I can really share my heart with, I can share my deepest convictions and so forth. Was that your experience?
Yes, even though it took a while. I'm mixed. My dad's black, my mom's white. And I grew up the first half of my life in a primarily mixed neighborhood. Thank you, redlining. I thought the whole world was like that. I thought the whole world was just like all kinds of people marrying each other, you know? Imagine my surprise. And then I moved to Orange. My mother moved us to Orange County, where I was the only black person in my high school. And I got it really quickly that what it felt like to be, you know, the thumb, like I was not like anybody else. And they expected me to be so different than I was. I found my community through music. I found the people who I just think that it's so hard for me to trust people who don't like music. I don't know many of them, but it's really hard to understand people who don't like music or it isn't an important part of their lives, because like I said, I feel like it opens your heart. And once your heart is open, the rest of you follows, your ears open, your eyes open. You really start to understand that we're one people and that we feel the same things. And you start to care about whether or not somebody else is happy or successful or has justice, you know? And once I moved here to Oakland, I found my tribe. And I feel like music has really led me to the community that I enjoy now. It opened me up and I found other gay people in that tribe through music. I found my black brothers and sisters who I had been, you know, sort of walled off from, and I started to understand my own legacy and my own history and women. All these categories feel like they keep us separate. And other men, white men, who feel the same way, white men whose hearts are open. All of us together in this community. Oakland is one of the most diverse places on earth. And I feel so home here because I can go to a cafe and see all ages, all abilities, all races. I'm not insulated from the world, and I'm not insulated from human beings. And that's a part of what makes Oakland music so remarkable, is our influences are so universal.
Well, that Bay Area thing is, I was just thinking about this the other day, where it's like you have this region that spawns not just like the Grateful Dead and CCR, but also has Tower of Power and even asleep at the wheel for a time is living up there. So
many. The Latin jazz, you know, the creation of Latin jazz pretty much happened here. I mean, sorry, New York, you can have yours, but we had a whole sound here, and all kinds of music. Green Day, punk revolution happened here. We have so much. I just got the opportunity to play a few songs with a band that was a punk band from the 90s called Tribe 8. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they were a huge influence, and I think the music here shows people how important having a diverse culture is.
So I was curious about that, about your relationship with punk music, because you're talking about coming up in the Vietnam era, and of course punk is just post that, but I'm guessing you would have been like the right age to be ripe for the energy and everything that it had with it. Do you remember your introduction to punk?
I unfortunately was, you know, I spent a lot of time touring during the time when punk was really in its heyday. I was out on the road in Japan with George Benson. You know, I missed it completely. The other thing that was important to remember is that I'm a little bit older than, I'm 10 years older than everybody else in the band, at least. And during my time of coming up, there were so few bands that allowed girls to play guitar that I eventually just learned another instrument and started playing percussion and started getting hired as a percussionist and a vocalist because they just weren't letting girls play guitar. So I eventually moved into a sort of a different style of music. And I started, you know, you've seen the bands that I worked with, and moved, you know, into jazz, into pop, but I spent so much time away from the United States and away and on the road that I really missed that era. And I feel like I'm getting to recapture it now, because that was the music that I grew up playing when I was in high school. I started playing rock music in my bands. I was playing MC5. So I got to play with the MC5. That was the music I was playing in my band when I was 14 and 15. So exciting. So yeah, I'm getting a chance to fulfill my teenage dreams now.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask about that because I'm originally from Michigan. So MC5, if I could have been, you know, tattooed as a preteen or something, I would have probably had the logo on my arm. So tell me about that, because that, you know, again, in terms of so much of everything else that you've done, that had to just be like,
oh, it was mind blowing. A friend of mine from here started writing with, you know, circuitous. I don't know how he met Wayne Kramer. I don't know that story. That's his to tell. But he called me up and says, "Hey, I'm writing with Wayne Kramer, and we're doing an MC5 record. And do you want to do vocals and blah, blah, blah?" And then the next thing I know, I played some percussion. I did some vocal arrangements. And then he said, "Hey, he's putting a band together. Do you want to play bass?" I was like, "What?" And because Wayne had in the interim seen my band, seen, you know, videos of my band, Brad had showed him. And I got to, like, you know, through a series of conversations with Wayne Kramer, he was not only just an incredibly brilliant and socially compassionate musician. He was always a fighter. He was always on the right side. But he's just deeply, deeply beautiful human being. We spent a lot of time talking on the phone over the couple of years that I got to know him. I mean, we clicked, and I loved talking to him, and I loved getting to know him. We did a sort of a short tour. We did, you know, we posted it up in Detroit for about a week, and then we did some shows in New York, shows in LA, shows here in the Bay Area. And we were, he was finishing the record and was we were getting ready to do that again. And then he got terribly ill and passed away just about a year ago, January. And it was a huge shock because he just seemed timeless. He seemed like a person who was going to go on forever. And it was just such an amazing experience to be able to play with those people. And I got to meet the original members who are still alive, of course, in Detroit. It's one of the big ones. I'm really, really grateful that I was able to do that.
To be around somebody like George Benson or Mavis Staples or Todd Rundgren, these people who just have so much music in them, and then the human part of it. How much of that is just like lay back and just see what happens, you know, to see how cool they are?
Well, I mean, when you're a musician in the band, you can't be starstruck. You can't, you know, you're there to do a job. You're there to support the artist, however you do it. You're there to learn a whole bunch of music and be the best you that you can be to fit into this situation. And it was hard not to be starstruck in certain situations like, well, Wayne Shorter was one. I never stopped being in awe. And I did my best and I felt so, there are a lot of bands that I've been in where I felt like I was learning more than I was providing. When it came down to it, I had a job to do and I played to the best of my ability. I have played for people who I just was completely in awe of. Laura Nero's another one, who was just, I just never stopped being in awe of her. Mavis Staples is another one. I mean, Mavis Staples is an amazing human being. All these people are amazing human beings. They're inscrutable a lot, especially people who have their own system of communication. Like Wayne never spoke in musical terms about what he wanted. He would paint a picture using abstract language. He would talk about a movie or something. He would say, you remember Robert, you know, like Gregory Peck in this movie, and the way he stood a certain way when it was time to deliver his speech, like that's what I want it to sound like. I'd be like, okay. And I just tried to be there in the moment with these people and gather as much and do as much as I could. I have been incredibly lucky in my life with the people that I've been able to play with. And people have all talked about like Laura Nero and how she communicated in colors, and you know, and you just do what you can, and if she doesn't like it, she lets you know and you try something else. I've always really enjoyed working with experimental people who don't have a set thing they want, that of every day do this thing. That's a little more challenging for me because I feel like being on stage and is being creative, and jazz is the best medium for that. But I think any kind of music can be like that if you open yourself up to the process and really be in the moment when you're there.
Tell me about this band and how. It's funny because I had to leave here for a little while and go do some errands, and I was sitting in the parking lot just blasting a lot of this music and feeling like a kid again, because there's so much, there's power and there's joy and there's a lot of those things that we've been talking about. I don't know that that's something you can sit down and talk about before you start making music, but it's obvious that those things are important to the four of you.
Yeah. I mean, this band started off as a jam session. I was still working with Mavis. I had just finished The Tonight Show. I was still living in Los Angeles. I was not sure what I wanted to do yet, and had started doing some touring with Mavis. And I came back up north and did a couple of shows of my own. I had a new Shelley, the guitar player, and we'd played a gig together. And we were standing around outside the club and coffee, and Shelley were talking about having a jam session, and a jam session that they had done with Katie already. And I was like, I want to do that, because the kind of music that I was doing, I didn't get a chance to really branch out. I had been sort of locked into the Tonight Show, which was 5 days a week, every week. It was very prescribed. We often had our evenings, you know, taken up with video shoots for the show. And I had so little time to move around and play with other people while I was there that I was really hungry to play with some new musicians. And so they let me come down, and it was instant magic. It was just instant magic, because it had been so long since I'd played with people who were just so joyful about what they did. And Shelley is such a powerful guitar player that I was just kind of blown away. And there were already two guitar players, you know, Katie and Shelley. So I had played bass. I played bass for Laura Nyro. I mean, I played bass in different bands up until then. So I decided that bass would be the instrument that I would bring to this jam session. And in the first time we got together, we started writing a song. Shelley came up with an idea, and I added on to it, and Coffee added on to it. And that has been the way that we play music ever since then. We get together, and somehow the quartet merges, and we literally co-write songs. It's astonishing to me how it works. One of the four of us usually comes up with an idea, and then because we have such different influences, it comes together in a really organic way. And I had never really written with people before. I'd always been like alone in my room writing stuff. It felt like homework, you know? And we started playing together. We basically, the band came out of that experience of playing and writing and jamming together, and it hasn't stopped. I mean, it helps that they're wonderful people and we're friends outside of the band. And like we're each other's community. We're in each other's lives. But the music is an outgrowth of that. I just feel like these are some of the most compassionate, beautiful, generous human beings that I've known in a really long time. And I'm so proud to be in a band with them. It's really exciting to be in a band with your friends.
When that happens, when you're writing with the band, as opposed to, as you said, you know, in your room, like it's homework or whatever, does that open you up to risks? Like, wow, there's a live drummer here and I'm going to do something kind of crazy.
Yes. We try all kinds of things. And sometimes I'm more open to it than other times. Sometimes somebody plays something and it's like, well, but I liked that part. I wanted that part to stay. And somebody wants to try something experimental, and you know, one or the other of us doesn't, you know, but we're used to, we push and pull, we give in and allow each other to take up the space they need. And sometimes it turns into something it would never have occurred to me to try, but it's brilliant. And I would have been like, no, there's so many, it becomes so much more creative because there's so many voices, and all I have to do is get out of the way and be willing to open myself up and listen, and which is hard sometimes because I like my ideas. But it's really, it teaches me a lot in a personal growth. It's like everyone gets a voice and everyone gets to have their time to shine. That's what being in a band is, which is so exciting. You know, I'm getting to learn things that I think I always wanted this, but I never had the opportunity to do it.
So what about the EP, this collection of songs? How'd you kind of decide to sort of group these? Were these just like, this is the batch of the 10 best that we, or the 5 best that we wrote in this period of time? Or was there kind of more of a, I don't know, a concept or thought behind it?
Right. You know, this was a project that was we were asked to do this particular project by the Women's Audio Mission. They do this grant program every year where they get a grant and then they record a band. And we had 5 days or 6 days in the studio where we could actually write, write a record while we were in the studio. We had never done that before. Other times that we've recorded, we worked on songs and came up, did that thing, worked on songs and came up with, well, I think these are the strongest songs. In this process, we basically went in with a bunch of ideas and came out with songs. And we didn't intentionally have a concept of what we wanted the record to be. We were just kind of going in blind. We thought about it, we talked about it, and decided that we were just going to go in with an open mind and our instruments and see what we came up with. And it is interesting that it eventually became somewhat of a concept album, more or less, I think, because the times insisted it. It's impossible not to be concerned about the world in the last 5, 10 years. It's impossible not to be concerned about our country and democracy and human rights and women's rights and LGBTQ plus rights and the Black community and immigrants. And I mean, it's impossible not to be inundated with this information because we're at a tipping point here and our country is really in flux. And we knew what we wanted. I mean, each one of us individually knows what we want to write about. And this is the most pressing issue for most of us. I think so many people feel vulnerable and they want us as artists to give them a voice. And here's a song, here's a thing you can sing, here's a rhyme, go for it. Come sing this with us. Like the shirt that I'm wearing, which says, "We ain't never going back." I know people wait for that song during our set because they want to scream it. So that's sort of how it happened. We wrote more songs than are on the EP, but we ran out of time and money, which is how records are made. You go until you run out of time or money, but we still have those songs and we're going to release them later in the year, probably.
Was this 100% woman focused in the creation of this, the recording?
Yeah. 100%. Yes, because Women's Audio Mission is that. It's dedicated. Terry Wilson, a musician and engineer, created this container so that she could start trying to gather women and non-binary people to teach them about audio engineering. There are so few women in audio engineering in every aspect of the business. And so when they brought us in, they brought us in intentionally because we're an all-woman band, but it didn't hurt. And these productions were amazing. I mean, it's women from beginning to end, from recording to mastering. It was really, our album design woman, it's like we just, and I'm so proud because it just works. We just did it. It's not any different. We're professionals, we all know how to do it. And that's the secret of diversity, equity, and inclusion, is that the talented people are here. They already know what they're doing. They already are the best at what they do. And all they have to be is given an opportunity. Well, anyway, I'm not going to go down that road right now, but that's the point of this of Women's Audio Mission and our band. It's like, you think women can't rock? I beg to differ.
You've been listening to a conversation with Vicki Randall of Skip the Needle. The band's new EP, Wake Up, Wake Up, Wake Up, is out March 7th. You can learn more about Skip the Needle at skiptheneedle.com. Vicki Randall's official website is vickirandall.com. That's VickiRandle.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting the KMUW website, kmuw.org. You can also send us questions and comments via info@kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.